This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty, Israel's Prime Minister. Benjamin Netanyahu appealed to his coalition partners not to bring down the government, even as coalition partner Jewish Home said it plans to make an announcement in Parliament Monday. Mr. Netanyahu, who is not scheduled to face the voters until next year, said he told his coalition partners this is a time for responsibility, especially at this what he called security-sensitive time. University of San Francisco Mideast analyst Stephen Zunas said Mr. Netanyahu, beset by multiple corruption investigations, lost his defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, who resigned last week after the government agreed to a ceasefire, ending 2 days of violence with Hamas in Gaza.
You had the defense minister, Lieberman, engaging in this risky operation in Gaza while the prime minister was in Europe for the commemorations of World War One. It was a botched operation. They ended up both killing the Israeli operatives and some top Hamas officials. And Hamas, of course, retaliated with the rocket attacks, and Israel retaliated with that heavy bombing and threatened to escalate. Netanyahu put a stop to it. And Lieberman's upset because he, frankly, wanted to go to another full-scale war.
Mr. Netanyahu's Likud coalition government is now down to just one vote majority. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari kicked off his re-election campaign Sunday with a manifesto highlighting an anti-corruption agenda should he win the vote February 16. The 75-year-old Mr. Buhari, former military ruler, turned out his predecessor, Goodluck Jonathan, in the first time an opposition candidate ousted an incumbent through the ballot box. Mr. Buhari's anti-graft drive during his first term failed to secure any high-profile convictions, while his opponents charge his campaign focused on the opposition. One of his opponents, the former vice president, Abubakar, is expected to outline his policy agenda Monday. President Donald Trump, in an interview on Fox News Sunday, said his administration has the audio recording of the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, but does not want to hear it.
We have the tape. I don't want to hear the tape. No reason for me to hear the tape.
Why don't you,
but
want,
I've been
why
fully
don't you want to hear it, sir?
Because it's a suffering tape. It's a terrible tape. I've been fully briefed on it.
Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the kingdom's de facto leader, is suspected of orchestrating the murder, but has denied any knowledge of it. Mr. Trump was asked about that.
Will anybody really know? All right. Will anybody really know? But he did have certainly people that were reasonably close to him and close to him that were probably involved. You saw we put on very heavy sanctions, massive sanctions on a large group of people from Saudi Arabia. But at the same time, we do have an ally, and I want to stick with an ally that in many ways has been very good.
On a separate program, Senator Lindsey Graham insisted the Crown Prince was involved in ordering the killing of Khashoggi, calling the Crown Prince unhinged and irrational, and who has done a lot of damage to the bilateral relationship. The U.S.-led coalition denied reports its airstrikes targeting Islamic State militants in eastern Syria killed dozens of civilians. The coalition insisted it only struck legitimate militant targets, suggesting other attacks carried out in the region did not involve coalition forces. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said more than 40 people, mostly civilians, were killed in Saturday's airstrikes. Sri Lankan President Maithripala Sirisena has asked for a third parliamentary vote of no confidence in the nascent administration of Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa, his choice to lead the government. Chandra Athukarola said Mr. Sirisena last month sacked Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe, someone he said he couldn't work with.
He appointed Mr. Rajapaksa, his former enemy, as Prime Minister, hoping that within a couple of weeks' time, they would be able to get enough majority on the parliament by buying some of the opposition members of the parliament. That strategy did not work.
Two previous no-confidence motions were based on a voice vote. Asia-Pacific leaders meeting in a summit in Papua New Guinea failed Sunday to agree on a final communique for the first time since the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, forum first met in a summit in 1993 amid trade and security tensions between the U.S. and China. In Madagascar, two former leaders, Andry Rajoelina and Marc Ravalomanana, emerged among 34 other contestants to win the most votes and qualify for a presidential runoff December 19th. More than a year after it disappeared, the wreckage of an Argentine submarine was found submerged in more than 900 meters of water by marine tracking contractor Ocean Infinity. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and I'm in for James Batty. And today is Monday, November the 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari launched his manifesto with hopes that his anti-corruption agenda can win him a second term in next year's general elections.
Corruption is an existential threat to Nigeria. Despite the gains we have made in closing the gates, we know that there is still much ground to cover to stop systematic corruption.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking at the launch of his anti-corruption agenda, hoping that it will win him the second term in next year's general elections. And renewable energy experts and advocates from around West Africa recently met in Dakar, Senegal, to discuss how West Africa can reach its goal of 20% of the area's electricity coming from renewable sources, and also find ways to provide universal access to electricity.
By 2020 or 2025, the whole region will be interconnected. This will be one of the key tools to allow that regional, that full regional interconnection in terms of distribution of power.
Mahama Kapaya is the head of ECOWAS Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency. And as social media use continues to grow on the continent, young people in Africa are using it as a platform to create and expand their businesses. Stay tuned. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. This Sunday, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari launched his manifesto, hoping that his anti-corruption agenda can help him win a second term in the upcoming general elections, slated for February 16 of next year.
We know that to succeed, moral integrity and conscience must continue to form the dominant character of our nation and its leadership. Corruption is an existential threat to Nigeria. Despite the gains we have made in closing the gates, we know that there is still much ground to cover to stop systematic corruption.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari speaking at the launch of his anti-corruption agenda. However, analysts said that despite Buhari's focus on tackling corruption, there has not been any significant convictions related to graft in his first term. The main opposition party has accused Buhari of focusing on its members, an accusation the presidency denies. The campaign of opposition candidate former Vice President Atiku Abubakar called Buhari's manifesto an anti-climax, which did not address Nigeria's economic problems. And from Nigeria, we go to East Africa, specifically in Uganda, where Burundian refugees in the country are finding creative ways to earn a living in exile. One of the most popular ways is using traditional dance and drums to entertain at various public and private events, including weddings. Most of the youth fled the 2015 political violence in their country. Moses Havyarimana has more on this story.
Once a university student in Burundi hoping to finish his last year as a sociologist, a 30-year-old Olivier Nduimana has turned up to be a drummer after forming a culture troupe together with other fellow Burundians to earn a living in Uganda's capital, Kampala. He fled Burundi after being accused of supporting opposition parties.
Life is not fair. We struggle to survive, but God help, we do culture, we don't have a lot of connections, but we do our level best, we try to knock around, then we get some shows, we entertain the weddings.
Olivier Nduimana and other three Burundian refugees formed a miracle entertainment group which consists of Burundian refugees, mainly youth. The group was created in 2016 as a way of earning a living. Another 18-year-old Burundian refugee in Uganda, who is also a member of the culture troupe, preferred not to disclose her name. She says that even getting what to eat is a challenge.
If the situation changed, I have to go back. I missed, but I don't have a choice to go back. I miss my friends, I miss my country, but it is hard. Yeah, it is hard.
Uganda hosts 1.1 million refugees, with 33,000 from Burundi. Many still think it's not the right time to return to their home country despite reports of relative stability in Burundi. George Odong is a member of the East African Legislative Assembly.
As much as we are investing in this refugee situation, we need also to be investing in peace. Our refugee policy should also be putting an invitation to governments from where these refugees are coming from to put an effort on peace and security. We are so receptive to refugees, but I don't think they are very comfortable being called refugees here. I think home is best, no matter where you go.
Uganda comes third as a refugee hosting country worldwide, with 67% of the refugees coming from South Sudan. The East African Legislative Assembly Committee on Conflict Resolution visited Uganda to assess the refugee situation in the country. With home countries still yet to stabilize, many refugees here believe returning home is something they don't expect anytime soon. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Kampala.
And still in Uganda, where mobile money agents in the country have welcomed the government directive to reduce mobile money tax from 1% to 0.5%. They say the move has improved their business, but many of them are still calling on the government to repeal the tax on mobile money because it discourages entrepreneurship and business. Reporter Mugume Davis Wakarinji files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
The directive was announced last Friday by David Bahati, the State Minister for Finance and Economic Planning. Albert Muchungs, who heads the Information Communication Technology Association in Uganda, or ICTAU, an umbrella of ICT private sector companies and professionals in Uganda, says they welcome the move to reduce mobile money taxes.
We're happy that finally the 0.5% tax has been implemented by government. This has taken quite a long time. We are glad that the tax that we saw as unfair has been at least reduced. Obviously, we're not celebrating, we're just encouraged. As a sector, we believe that mobile money should not be taxed, at least not the withdrawal charges, which we should make it as easy as possible for people to access mobile money.
In June this year, the parliament voted to levy a 1% tax on all mobile money transactions, including deposits, sending or receiving mobile money. But following public outcry that led demonstrations by mobile money agents and activists, the parliament amended a mobile money tax bill, reducing the tax to 0.5%. The government, however, did not immediately implement the law. Justin Namale, a mobile money agent in Kampala, says her business has improved since the announcement.
I'm happy because they have reduced the mobile taxes, because right now my business is moving on. I have more customers because by then, customers were not depositing money because of the taxes. But right now, they are depositing their money because the taxes have been reduced.
Bosco Serwada, another agent in Kampala, agrees.
We are glad as we are an agent because now we're receiving many clients who are depositing, who are making their withdrawal money from their phones because the government has reduced the taxi. Now it seems mobile money will be fine. Now we are somehow busy.
Muchungu says the government should also remove a tax on social media.
If you look at numbers of internet users, numbers of social media users, they have fallen sharply. If we just use the case of Facebook, for example, the numbers have fallen from just 3 million Facebook users in Uganda to under 2.3 million, which is significant. And we need to continue to make sure that our people can afford to use some of these digital services.
This year, the government introduced a 200 shilling levy for anyone that uses social media in Uganda. This means that users pay 6,000 shillings or about $2 monthly in order to be able to access Facebook, WhatsApp, Twitter, or any other social media sites. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. In The Gambia, social security staffers have embarked on a sit-down strike following the sacking of a staff representative at the Social Security Housing and Finance Corporation Board. As Pande Rimbaya reports, the strike action is taking a toll on pensioners' welfare.
The Social Security Workers' Strike action has resulted in the deployment of armed police intervention unit officers at their corporate headquarters in Banjul. Over 271 workers are taking part in the strike action. This followed a recommendation made by a committee that was set up by President Adama Barrow to investigate the staffers' dispute with their managing director, Mohamed Manjang. Manjang has been accused of alleged corruption, abuse of office, and nepotism. He has denied the charges. Both Manjang and Kamara were placed on an administrative leave pending the outcome of the probe. Part of the committee's recommendation was for Manjang to be reinstated back to the Social Security and Mamoru Kamara be fired. The committee's recommendation has been implemented. Kamara has finally been sacked. Keba Ture is an assistant manager at the Social Security Pension Department.
The president has made this decision to fire our democratically elected staff rep, Mamoru Kamara, and going against the findings or the recommendations of the constitutionally established institution, the ombudsman, that has found Manjang culpable, that has found Manjang guilty of all the allegations that we have leveled against him, the Padiem theft, the Isabayo scandal, the dinners, the wastefulness on those dinners.
A finding released by the ombudsman has cited Manjang for abuse of Padiem allowances and the parastatal staff entertainment budget. The ombudsman also censored the staff for their disorderly conduct by locking down the Social Security building during a protest march. Some of the staffers' allegations against Manjang were also rejected. Keba Ture again.
So basically, our demands as staffers of Social Security is that let the recommendations of the ombudsman and not the independent panel be implemented to the latter. These are our demands. Let Mamoru Kamara be reinstated as soon as possible and that we cannot work with Manjang anymore. We can never work with Manjang anymore. Manjang stays at the helm of that institution. Nothing is going to work. Nothing is going to work smoothly. Let the government understand that. Let the president, His Excellency Adama Barrow, understand that.
The Social Security staffers' dispute with MD Manjang has been going on for over a year now. The committee has recommended for staff engaged in past protest marches be disciplined. Keba Ture told VOA that the president's decision to reinstate Manjang will only legitimize corruption in government.
The implications for reinstating Muhammadu Manjang, who has been found culpable on all the damning allegations we have leveled against him, will be very dire to the progress of this country. It will be threatening our efforts in the fight against corruption, in the fight against corrupt officials in our institutions.
Muhammadu Kamara told a local Gambian radio, West Coast Radio, that his sacking was an affront to Gambia's newfound democracy.
This is a very sad day for corporate governance in the Gambia. It's a sad day for all public enterprises in the Gambia. It's a very sad day for all institutions in the Gambia. It's a very sad day for any Gambian worker, that whistleblower, that people who can hold their leaders accountable will be victimized when they have the facts. The ombudsman came with the report, and all the things you said in our position, we are giving a lot that we are right. We just should instead be charged and face economic crime.
Social Security workers say they will not resume work unless their demands are met. They are calling for the firing of MD Manjang. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pande Rimbaya reporting.
And we stay in West Africa, where renewable energy experts and advocates from around the region recently met in Dakar to discuss how West Africa can reach its goal of 20% of the area's electricity coming from renewable resources and universal access to electricity. The head of ECOWAS Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency, Mahama Kapaya, spoke with reporter Rikish Ryok about what he says is the region's most ambitious plans for the future of energy, the solar corridor through the Sahel.
For the past 8 years or so, we've spent a lot of time working on policies and the regulatory framework in terms of moving the issue of energy access to the forefront of sustainable development objectives of the region. Now we're trying to move to the operational side of things to see how our member states can actually implement these policies and plans that we've supported them to develop.
What are some of the projects in the region that you think are the most exciting or, you know, that are most, you're most positive about?
Well, in the region, we are proud to see now that we are seeing a lot of individual power purchase, power producers, IPPs coming on, especially for solar. So we're seeing a lot of large scale solar power plants that are coming on, which just 3-4 years ago, it was looked at as something that was impossible. You know, many people were saying the region is not ready, our utilities are not ready, the countries are not ready, you know, to bring all the financial instruments that are needed. So Senegal, for instance, so many power plants, solar power plants are coming on in Burkina. We've seen power plants coming on. We're also proud to see that the anchor to energy being that the grid is being handled by the West African Power Pool. By 2020 or 2025, the whole region will be interconnected. This will be one of the key tools to allow that regional, that full regional interconnection in terms of distribution of power. So.
That was Mahama Kapaya, the head of ECOWAS Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency. He was speaking to reporter Ricky Shryok. In the last couple of years, social media use in Africa has been growing exponentially, with millions around the continent using popular platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to connect with others around the world. In Nigeria, the use of social media is fueling the growth of a new kind of entrepreneur. From Lagos, Samuel Okocha reports on how one food entrepreneur is using social media to sell food online.
From this kitchen in Surulere area of Lagos, 27-year-old Olashile Abayomi makes Nigerian soups for busy people who love good food but don't have a lot of time on their hands. After several years searching for a good job, Olashile found fulfillment in starting her own online soup cooking and delivery business.
Each time I make a delivery, each time I finish cooking, I get this fulfillment, I get this peace within me, like I've actually made someone happy.
Olashile runs Soup or Market from her home. Clients make orders on the kind of soup they want, then she starts to cook. But for clients to come, Olashile goes online using social media platforms such as Instagram to advertise her business.
When I finish cooking, I take pictures of my food and I post. People get to see it, tell their friends, tag their friends on the pictures, and people get to order from there.
She sells soups in liters, and a liter, depending on the kind of soup, goes for about $10. The story of Olashile highlights how increasing internet penetration and online platforms provide opportunities for the growth of small businesses in Nigeria, cutting costs associated with operating a brick-and-mortar store. But many small business owners may never enjoy the benefit of online platforms to grow their businesses. That's according to Robert Omotunde, a Lagos-based investment analyst.
The constraints that, you know, we have in this part of the world, there are so many of such businesses that are yet to come, you know, under this platform because of the level of literacy. Most of those that are into retail businesses are not so learned, and as much as internet penetration is growing in the country, it might take some time for those of them that are not so 21st century compliant, you know, for them to be able to tap into this huge opportunity. More so if the person is not that literate.
Meanwhile, Olashile looks forward to expanding our business.
Yeah, for now it is an online business, but in 5 years' time, I hope to expand and have a physical restaurant where people can walk in and have a feel of our delicacies.
With a population of nearly 170 million people, more than a third of whom subscribe to mobile internet services, Nigeria remains a huge potential market for the growth of online small and retail businesses. Samuel Okocha for VOA, Lagos, Nigeria.
Now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the CAF AFCON Cup of Nations qualifying matches played across various venues this past weekend. A total of 13 countries. These include Guinea, Ivory Coast, Mauritania, Nigeria, Uganda, Mali, Cameroon, Egypt, Madagascar, Senegal, Tunisia, and Morocco all booked their places for the 2019 AFCON Cup of Nations tournament scheduled to take place in Cameroon. That leaves 11 places up for grabs during March Day 6 next March, with former champions Congo-Brazzaville, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ghana and South Africa among the contenders. On Saturday, Nigeria drew 1-1 with South Africa in Soweto, and Super Eagles coach Gerard Rowe described the game as a difficult one.
It was very hot, a long traveling, arriving only without sleeping in the night, so in second half was very difficult. But we started well the match. We scored the first goal, and then our tactic was okay.
Stuart Baxter, the Bafana coach, said he was disappointed and at the same time proud of the performance of his players.
We've taken 4 points off the Super Eagles, and the only goal we've conceded so far in this tournament is an own goal. I'm disappointed a little bit, and I'm proud a little bit, you know?
In other games, Libya triumphed 8-1 in the Seychelles and hosts South Africa next March on the final match day, needing a win to accompany Nigeria in qualifying from Group E. In Monrovia, Zimbabwe were 18 minutes away from qualifying for their second successive Nations Cup from Group G until William Jabor struck for the Lone Stars in the 72nd minute to win 1-0. Scorer of the only goal in the match, team captain William Jabor told VOA Moses Gazao in Monrovia that they got the victory they wanted.
We knew that we were going to win because we had that mentality set from the beginning, from the moment that we set our foot on the soil. So the victory came after through the grace of God, but we were mentally prepared to win today.
For coach of the Zimbabwe Warriors, Sunday Jinzambwa, he blamed the defeat on his team's lack of ability to score in the match.
We didn't create enough scoring chances as we normally do. The half chances we got, we missed, and it happens in football. I think that's how we lost the game.
In East Africa, Uganda edged Cape Verde 1-0 in Kampala to qualify for their second successive AFCON tournament with a game at hand. Although Morocco beat Cameroon 2-0 at home on Friday, their qualification was only confirmed on Saturday after Comoros beat Malawi 2-1 in Moroni in another Group B showdown. Elsewhere, Mauritania qualified for AFCON for the very first time in their history on Sunday with a 2-1 win over Botswana. And it was Manchester City star Riyad Mahrez who scored twice as Algeria trounced Togo 4-1 in Lome on Sunday to qualify. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great week ahead of you. And that's it for this Monday, November 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi, wishing you a very good Monday morning, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. An in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic next week will be personal hygiene. This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.